And then right after graduating, I went to Peru to help set up community centers. And it was their global vision. I was going to be there for a year-long project. And I stayed there doing social impact work for almost 8 years.
We can endure anything and adapt and pivot and change. Wrestling gave us that ability.
I would say nothing in life has impacted me more than the things wrestling has taught me in terms of self-reflection, resilience.
Toughness. Some guys have it, some guys don't.
Adversity, 100%. How to pick myself up and be a man after I failed.
And everything that has shaped my life and where I'm at today would not be there without the values and basically the lessons I've learned through the sport of wrestling.
For me, wrestling saved my life because it allowed me to focus and channel my energy.
We're fortunate if you wrestled, because if you wrestled, natural talent helps, but it's 5% of the ingredient. It pales in comparison to heart and technique and effort.
It humbled me, taught me humility. Nothing can humble you more than wrestling.
I think it's the learning to adapt, right? You learn how to adapt, you learn how to solve problems.
You know, if I look back at my time, that's good wrestling. If it gave me one thing more than anything else, it's mental toughness.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Wrestling Changed My Life podcast. It's your host, Ryan Warner. It's NCAA week. Can't wait for the tournament to get started on Thursday. Those of you that are going, enjoy it. There'll be brackets going on, pools. It's going to be a lot of fun. In the meantime, new episode for you. It's with Ben Ryder, Executive Director, Beat the Streets National. Ben wrestled at Penn, was a former Bellator heavyweight contender. Awesome guy and incredible stories about living in Peru and some of the things you're doing at Beat the Streets National. Speaking of which, Beat the Streets National, our new sponsor, has been for about a month now. They're hosting a Celebration of Impact this Friday, 3:30 to 7. So in between the quarters and the semis at the NCAAs, it's at the Grand Hall at the Power and Light, 1330 Baltimore Ave, KC. Go to national.beatthestreets.org to get your tickets. It's the Beat the Streets National Celebration of Impact going on this Friday, hosted by the one and only Jordan Burroughs. It's going to be a great event. Thank you to Beat the Streets National. Thanks to everyone who's listening to this podcast. We'll be back next week. Do a little recap at the NCAA tournament. Until then, folks, we'll see you in a week. Peace! Ben Ryder, welcome back to the podcast. How you doing?
Good, Ryan. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's such an honor, man. And it's good to have you. I've talked about it in a few episodes with the listeners. You know, Beat the Streets and Wrestling Changed My Life, you know, multi-year partnership. So let me just say how grateful I am for that, man. It's exciting, and I'm super, super fortunate.
We feel the same way. You know, the name, you know, Wrestling Changed My Life is very, you know, it's equivalent to you're capturing the soul of the Beat the Streets mission, and the stories that you capture is that's the experience that we're trying to provide, and we are providing for youth that otherwise wouldn't have had that opportunity across the country. And we want to grow this, and we're reaching over 10,000 youth a year now across multiple cities in the country. And we could go and take this movement to a whole new scale, and it's changing lives. And what you do and the inspirational stories and the people that you talk to, it captures just how it's a really strong vehicle for impact, the experience of the sport, having a care coach in your corner, and the life lessons that are packed into it. So we're taking that experience and using it as a vehicle for social impact, a way to get youth that are seeing some really tough stuff and facing very unfair adversity, and using that experience as a way to empower them to go and set some amazing goals and better their circumstances and do amazing things in life.
Absolutely. So I want to talk about Beat the Streets National and all the fun stuff you're doing, but I got to ask you first, you just got back from Saudi Arabia. You know, tell us about that. What's it like over there, man?
Oh man, I should have told you this before the interview. That got canceled.
Did it?
Yeah, it did.
That's okay.
So I was supposed to be there. I was supposed to be in Saudi Arabia last week, cornering a a fighter who's Jesus Pinedo. He was I used to coach him when he was a kid when I lived in South America for about 7 8 years or so, and I was a professional fighter during that time. And one of the Pinedo was a 16-year-old kid during that time when I first met him, and I helped coach him, and now he won the PFL World Championship. So that was a million dollar prize for that tournament champion. It was just a complete life-changing, really, really, really awesome story. And he's been at it for a while, and it's just been it's completely transformative. And then they were doing the PFL versus Bellator champion. They were doing that unification kind of champ versus champ card. So he was going to fight the Bellator champion last week, but about a week before the fight, he has got a bulging disc, an inflamed disc, and he's got to take some time off to let that calm down and recover. And then they'll look to reschedule the fight soon enough, and then I'll be there wherever that is. But I was going to go corner him for that fight. It was I'm bummed on missing out of it, but it was I'm sure he'll take some recovery, and looking forward to the next one.
And for folks who haven't listened to our previous podcast, give us the 5-minute overview on how you ended up down in South America.
Well, it was right after college. I went to UPenn, wrestled there. I did social impact work all throughout. And then right after graduating, I went to Peru to help set up community centers, and I was there with Global Vision. I was going to be there for a year-long project. I was working on the outskirts of Arequipa in these areas called Pueblos Jóvenes. So they were kind of like new settlements, people coming down from the Andes Mountains and getting things figured out. And there weren't schools set up or running water or electricity. So these vulnerable populations. So I was going to be there for a year-long project, met my wife, started the family. Both my kids were born in Peru. And I stayed there doing social impact work for almost 8 years. And in parallel to that, I was a professional MMA fighter and competed all over the world. And I was at a South American title for about 4 years. And then I competed for Bellator as close to a title shot there. So for another, I was with Bellator for about another 4 years. And that was my journey. And then in 2017, I moved back to Philadelphia. I'm from New York originally, but then I went to college in Philadelphia. Went back to Philadelphia, working for Beat the Streets Philadelphia in 2017. And I just always loved the mission, admired the organization, always want to be a part of it. And it was, and there was an opportunity during that time and moved. And my wife and I were talking about moving to the States. So we did that. We made that transition and got my family over here. And I've been with Beat the Streets for 7 years now in a couple different roles with Beat the Streets Philadelphia, and about a bit over 2 years now leading the national office.
Wow. What a journey. And it's so cool that you just kind of brushed under the rug that you were the champion there in South America. And so it's one thing you said, though, I got to go back to the villages you were helping set up. These people were coming down from the Andes. So like, what kind of conditions are they living in when they're living in the mountains? Is it even more rural than what you saw?
Oh, way more rural. Yeah, because they were coming to the outskirts of it. So those Pueblos Jóvenes is kind of a term for that, could be any major city. It's like the outskirts of a city where people are coming. This basically just means new settlements, really. And there's about there could be a 20-year period where there's not really much infrastructure until enough people are there and get organized. And so there's in the mountains, we would also do these relief campaigns. We would take we would take warm clothing and blankets all the way into very rural areas in the Andes Mountains. And that's people were coming, the areas that when I went to Arequipa to work in, they were coming to those areas to get close to a city, to get close to get work. But couldn't afford to live in the city. So they're living in the outskirts and just kind of setting up camp, you know?
Yeah.
But if you go very, if you, there's a, yeah, you can go in some very rural areas, which I've been to. And it's much more isolated. I mean, you could, it's interesting.
Is it scary when you go in there like that? Like the first time you went?
No, I did all this in my 20s. It's kind of like, I was just living life and enjoying every bit of it and doing everything you can. And the I mean, there I did have a the I'll tell you the time I was I was on a bus hijack. That's a kind of crazy
story. Hear it. What happened?
So sometimes if you're we would do these campaigns, we were bringing clothing and blankets up to these rural villages and these mountains, and that's a lot of people freeze to death in the winter. We were talking something like let's see here, around 25 feet altitude or so, like really up there. And and during one of those campaigns, I was coming back, returning to Lima after that. And sometimes there's these clandestine gold mines in some areas, and so people will so anyway, I was on a bus, and it was just a public bus, and there was, you know, it was about in the middle, like 3 in the morning or so, and I was sleeping. I thought it was an earthquake, and but it wasn't an earthquake. The bus was going off road, all rocky terrain, and then when I wake up, there was like one guy with a pistol kicked the door out, 4 other guys. So there's 5 guys with guns, and they were tracking someone that was transporting gold from like an illegal gold mine. They said it had about $80,000 worth of gold. So they knew that seat number, that was the target, but they just robbed everyone while they were there. So that was kind of rough. I was with a friend who had a military jacket on, who was which was his brother's, but they went to us two right away and just like gun to the temple of the head, and like, if you move, you die kind of thing. And then thankfully they just wanted money, and
oh my god, just
wanted money, and nobody got hurt. So thank God nobody got hurt. But yeah,
was the one guy on the bus the one they thought was on there?
Yeah, the one guy came snuck on as a passenger and then let his friends on.
Oh,
that's what it looked like to me.
No, I meant the guy who was like they were tracking. Like, was the guy on there actually smuggling gold after all, or had they the wrong bus?
No, they had the right guy. Yeah. They're the right guy.
Oh my
Lord. There's a good for that kind of, you know, I don't know. There's a good chance he was in on it and gave the tip, and
yeah.
I don't know. But yeah.
Oh my Lord. And then how did you interact with our friend of the show, Raleigh, down there? How did that all link up?
Oh well, Raleigh's my friend from college. He wrestled at Penn. So we go way back. And then one time so I was living down there, and then Raleigh and a few of my other close friends from college came down to visit, and we went into Machu Picchu, and they visited me in Lima, and we did, you know, they stayed for a week or so. And then Raleigh really liked it. And I took them to the gym that I was training at. So they went and, you know, got a workout in, you know, these are all former Penn wrestlers. And Raleigh was he was hooked, and it wasn't me that convinced him. Maybe my coach in Peru, I think, did a little bit, but I think he just wanted to do it. And he ended up coming down maybe within a year, well, maybe 6 months later or so from that. He ended up coming down and just like, hey, I'm gonna stop my finance career on Wall Street and come live in Peru and go be a pro fighter. And he came down and he stayed with us for a while, and he was living in Lima for at least a year or so. And that's the time when he wrote his book, was during that whole year.
He's still on the road.
He never stopped since. He never stopped. He's all over. You never know where he's going to be. He's got a very exciting life.
He does, man.
He's been to something like 100 countries, I think.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Easily.
Yeah. We're working on a documentary now. It's an audio documentary. It's about these two wrestlers from Iran. They were like 16 when the Iranian Revolution of 1979 happened. And then, you know, the country goes on lockdown. It's a very dangerous place, and it's not at all what they thought the revolution would be, right? They thought it was going to be a good thing, and it turned out to be a bad thing for them and their family. So they qualify for the Iranian military world team and go wrestle at the military worlds in Venezuela, and they defect. And that's kind of how the story starts. And they get stuck in Venezuela for a year. No one would take them. And then they end up going, catching a flight to Madrid, and then they get stuck there. Then ultimately they end up in the US, and it's just an incredible story. I won't give it away, but man, it is. So Raleigh and I, we work on every project together, and we're on episode 2 of 4 right now with the script. And, you know, it's just, he's such a sharp person with writing and storytelling. So we're honored to have him, friend of the show. So I just thought it was cool though, because he was always telling me about you, man. He's like, you got to get this guy on. He's like, he brought wrestling to Peru. I keep wanting to say Nicaragua, but Peru. And I mean, did anyone know about wrestling when you went down there, or were they all strikers?
Oh, they did. There was a small group of, there is a wrestling federation there. I mean, there's a small group of that kind of level wrestling guys that will compete in the Pan Am Games and, you know, a pretty decent level. But it's not widespread. You don't have it in schools or, you don't really have it in, yeah. So it's not nearly anywhere close to as widespread, but there's some wrestling, you know. There's and then our coach, so Raleigh's and I coached down there, Ivan Iberica, he was part of the national wrestling team, and then went into Luta Livre, which is no-gi submission grappling, and he fought a bunch of times in Brazil before the UFC was even really around. And that's when it was Valley Tudo, and then he took that he had a bit of a wrestling base, and then on top of that, all the submission grappling through Luta Livre, and then pile on the striking on top of that. And now they've got a really he's done a really good job there in building, you know, they built a world champion, and they built multiple world-class fighters. And that's rare to see.
Yeah.
Because usually the gym that gets you from day one, the coach that gets you from day one to at least in the MMA world, the one that, you know, that you start with, a lot of times once guys get to a certain level, they go into a mega camp to maybe, you know, one of the larger camps, and then that usually helps him get to that next level. But he's been able to get guys from the ground up, first day ever training to world competitor level. So, you know,
it's just such a contrast, because here you are doing all the social impact work and now leading Beat the Streets, and we're going to get into that. But at the same time, you're smashing dudes in the ring. Like, were you doing it full time, or like doing both, like kind of half part time?
Well, when I was competing, I mean, I haven't competed in a while. That hasn't been my life for a while. I'm all in with Beat the Streets, and I just want to, that's my fight.
Yeah.
You know, I want to grow, I want to grow the Beat the Streets movement to every, you know, for youth in need across the entire country and eventually across the world. And that's, and we just have such an amazing mission and amazing cause and amazing kids coming through this organization. That's 100% my fight. When I was competing, I was a professional full-time athlete. So all of my earnings were coming from competing. And then I was also running charitable work in South America. So I was doing both in parallel.
Got it. Okay. You probably know this guy, but who's the guy who fights in Bellator who's doing all the wells for the Pygmies?
Justin Wren.
Justin Wren. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
He obviously has some focus in that world, but when you talk about, so Beat the Streets, I think about initially I thought about all the local chapters, and then I got to meet you and I learned about the structure of Beat the Streets National. So for someone who's never heard of it, what's the difference between Beat the Streets National and what some of the local chapters are doing?
Well, kind of in the name, right? When you're local, now the way that we grew too, we were a decentralized local movement first.
Okay.
So there were already, it was already growing across the country with each city, each chapter being its own, has its own board, is its own organization, has its own staff. And then it wasn't until much, much later that you had leaders from the four most established Beat the Streets, which were New York, Chicago, Philadelphia, Los Angeles. Leaders from those four got together and say, hey, we got to get ourselves organized at the national level. We got to trademark this. We got to have a bit of a, let's figure out a vehicle to share best practices and learn from each other. And let's figure out ways that we can get intentional about how we all can strengthen what we're doing currently, but also how can we scale this in a sustainable way. So it was, you know, some organizations start with the national vision off the bat. This Beat the Street started with, you know, individual cities and leaders from individual cities that said, I love this mission. I want to make it happen in my city. I want to happen in my community. And then it grew to that way. And then it was later that we got organized at the national level. So then the, so I'd say the big difference is just the, each local Beat the Streets leader needs to, the mission is to bring that mission locally and focus. How do we, you know, Beat the Streets LA needs to focus on how do we meet the need in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, every Beat the Streets city needs to focus on their city. And then the national office, our focus is how do we continue to strengthen what we're all doing, but then also how do we be the catalyst and support network to now bring this mission, bring this movement into other cities in a sustainable way, and to make sure and to do this in a way that every new Beat the Streets chapter is built to last and do this amazing work into perpetuity. So that's, it's just same, you know, we all have the same mission and all the same beliefs, and we're all working together. And it's just different. You know, I think the national is just, it's just different sides of, you know, how we're, division of labor of how we're going to go expand.
Yeah.
This movement, you know?
Well, like you said, it started as a bottoms up, right? And then now you're coming in with the top down, and it makes a lot of sense, because I don't think people realize how difficult it is to run a nonprofit, to have a board, to do all the fundraising. And the cities that have happened on their own, you just get some exceptional people there and magic happens, right? And that's what you mentioned with Philly and New York and LA and Chicago. But for those cities where we don't have that necessarily, you folks are coming in and saying, hey, we'll give you some of the, like, do you provide some of the guidelines, some of like the assistance, or is that your vision to be able to do that? Hey, we'll take care of the accounting. We'll take care of all the kind of the back office. Is that the vision?
We definitely provide guidelines and consulting. And when you're trying to start a new Beat the Streets, you're not in it on your own anymore. You don't have to figure it all out on your own. You can learn from what's working and not working in different areas of the country. We have plenty of we have a member representative board too. So we have leaders from different organizations sharing what's worked for them and hasn't worked, and the challenges and the opportunities that they've had locally. And then what we want to do, you know, we're in a building phase. When I started at National, there was a lot of strategy work and structure work that was already done, and figuring out our accreditation process, figuring out guidelines and an SOP that each city upholds but it was small funding wise and small staff wise, because that was the stage that we're in. So now we're building out the national organization. We're looking for, we're recruiting leaders. We built out we've been building meaningful national partnerships with our Gear Up campaign with ASICS, Gear to Compete. And we put on the national camp in Duels, which brings all these cities together. And then the big thing that we want to achieve now, to your point too, on some of the, we do want to streamline some things on the back office stuff. We want to be big enough to have funding to help with getting a leader in place, help with funding in that startup mode, help with consulting and guidance, which we already do, but also just kind of take some of the you mentioned accounting. That would be great.
Yeah.
if we could have funding to just outsource that and some of the things that, when you're a small nonprofit, you tend to have full-time staff. You need mission passionate, mission focused people, and that are doing the work. And then if we could build capacity to take some of the things that might fall through the cracks operationally and help with that, then we're building the structure in a really scalable and sustainable way, which is the goal. The goal is, how do we go and take this movement to reaching 10,000 youth a year to reaching 100,000 youth a year, because it's changing lives every day. We have, I mean, this is the work that we're doing. It's working, you know, it's working, and it's not just about, you know, success on the wrestling mat, and we love to see it. It's awesome. But that's way behind other things on our list as far as what we want for outcomes. You know, we want to see, we're seeing our kids, you know, graduate high school and go on, pursue meaningful careers and come back and give back to their younger mm-hmm. peers and all of that. That's we use the term positively altering life's trajectory. So essentially we want to help our youth go and set goals and better their situations and go on and do amazing things with their lives.
Yeah. I love how Clint talks about that. He's like, you know, it's not like we're doing a big change, but if you alter the change or the, if you alter the trajectory by just a few degrees, 10 years down the line, where do they end up? Right. It's a huge difference. I love that analogy.
Yeah.
Now, if I know this is going to happen, because anytime I have Mike Powell on or someone from Beat the Streets on, I get people reaching out and saying, hey, I live in Des Moines, Iowa. I live in St. Louis. I live in Kansas City, and we want to get a Beat the Streets going. When would you advise someone to reach out to you versus saying, hey, why don't you just start a club? And then, like, if it's around from 2 years, like, should we start with a club 2 years? It's still around. Then you want to do Beat the Streets. Like, how would you, what advice would you give? Cause there's people listening that are definitely going to reach out with that question.
Yeah. Well, we're happy. I mean, I'm definitely happy to have that overview conversation with anyone that's interested. And we do that. And I'd say where we're at nationally is we're building the vehicle to scale this the right way. So we need to be a little bit, you know, we're continuing to recruit leaders on the national level, our visionaries, we call them. We need to, get bigger funding wise, get bigger staffing wise. And then we have a plan to scale this across the country. And now we're going to go build that vehicle to do this. Then we have a handful of cities in the pipeline too, that we're onboarding.
Okay.
So nice. I'd say in the short term, you know, I'd say if you have a mission aligned club that you want to start and go and start, then it's like, then you have your proof of, you have your proof of concept program. And then in parallel to that, just think about, well, what would it take to scale this in our city? What would it take to go from reaching 50 youth a year to 500?
Yeah.
You know, and thinking through that. And I'd say it's definitely not too early to reach out and have some exploratory conversations about that, because we know the end goal is we do want this across every major city in the country. And it takes to do that. It is, each new Beat the Street city is its own, it's building a nonprofit organization. So that means setting up a board of directors, and on that board, you want community leaders, operationally minded leaders, and philanthropic leaders. We call it, there's different ways to think about that, but you want a good leadership group that is capable of understanding where the need is and how to reach the youth that we're trying to reach. And then also, and the partnerships are on the ground level. And then the type of leaders that also are able to build a strategic plan, build a budget, think operationally in that sense. And then also philanthropic leaders that are willing to financially support this and bring other people along with them to do that, to get it off the ground. Because the big thing that we see is within Beat the Streets and across small nonprofits in general, is that to build this in a sustainable way, you got to get to the point where you could actually fund some full-time staff, pay coaches stipends, have a budget to really do, you know, that's, then you get to a tipping point where, okay, now you could start really growing and moving in a positive trajectory as an organization. Versus if that's not one of the goals, you know, as far as building out a more of an org structure, but you have mission aligned work, sometimes what happens with small nonprofits is they could either stay really small, or a lot of times they might kind of fail after some time because they didn't build in the org structure and the staff team in place to go and take the organization to the next level. So just things to think about how we're going to, you know, our the way we're thinking about it at the national office is we're trying to be that catalyst, that support network. Let's learn from what's working in different areas of the country and get this to, now every new city that's off the ground is built to last and on a really positive trajectory. It comes down to people.
Yeah.
Always comes down to people. It comes down to that leadership team, getting the right people in place. And this is a movement that's inspiring people, which is great. And that's why I'm so grateful to you, Ryan, to be able to give us this platform and promote the mission. Cause what it comes down to, the only way this is going to work is we need to keep bringing on more leaders, more passionate people that are going to carry this and help move this mission forward and get plugged in at our national office, or get plugged in locally. If you have a local Beat the Streets, or if you want to start a Beat the Streets locally, you know, get plugged in with us to it and start thinking about that.
Well, I think you hit the main thing on the head that I always try to convey to folks when I'm talking about this is, you know, the wrestling part of it, like the coaching of the wrestling, that's a very small part of it. You're actually building a nonprofit. So you need to have non-wrestling people involved to, you don't have to be non-wrestling, but you need to have some business folks involved, right? Who know how to do some of this stuff, because it's not just a wrestling club, right? If you want to do the club, you know, Lord knows we need them and, you know, do it right. But if it's a beat the streets, you know, there's a lot that goes into it besides just the wrestling club aspect. And I don't mean to discourage anyone, but I do just want to say, hey, if we're going to, you know, schedule some time with you, let's make sure that we're all on the same page here, that it's not just a wrestling club. There's a ton that goes into it. And, you know, really it comes down to being able to fundraise and have some organization.
There is. There's a lot that goes into building a nonprofit organization. And it takes a strong group of leaders that are committed and capable and ready to do it. It can be done. It's been done. We've been doing this, and but yeah, you want to come with that understanding that it's, you know, it's not a light lift. It's a big lift to go and make this movement possible and make this movement grow. And then also, you know, part of the need there too, I mean, even just throughout, I mean, historically within wrestling, a lot of there were very limited opportunities within inner cities before Beat the Streets came around. So a lot of these school districts, a lot of these community centers, they needed an external nonprofit partner to get these programs off the ground. And there were very few opportunities to participate in the sport. And we all know, all of your listeners know how transformational that experience is. And the that is even now, even that's wrestling specific, but even across all sports, what's happening across the country is that the pay to play model is more and more common. So it's more of a private club. Participating in sports is more and more of a privilege and less of something that you could just do at your mm-hmm. school or at a local rec center or at so that's the trend that's happening. And so it's really important. And then youth living in poverty, they're 6 times more likely to quit sports because of cost barriers. And it's, you know, but, and we know how important that is, you know, for health. And then what we do is even beyond that, you know, we offer the sport, but we also offer mentorship and homework help and life guidance and positive role models and a big community. And so it's that work is really important. And then unfortunately there's less and less free or low cost opportunities that are happening in across the country. So we're needed in that sense to be able to, that's a big barrier and kind of, you know, sad issue that is trending in the other direction. And then, you know, so we need organizations like Beat the Streets to go and fight against that and make sure that these kids that need this experience have an opportunity to find the sport of wrestling, get a caring coach in the corner that's going to push them and help them set life goals, get a mentor and be welcomed into a community that cares about them and wants to see them succeed and has a, you know, have a safe place outside of a neighborhood where you're seeing a lot of the kids that we're working with. They're seeing drug deals on a daily basis. They're seeing shootings on a regular basis. They're seeing, I mean, the stories that we hear and the journeys that the adversity that our youth have to overcome, it's really, you know, it's really, really tough. You know, we've had youth coming in that are bouncing out of homelessness and then they're going on and, you know, we've had youth that have done that and going and getting full ride scholarships or graduating out of these schools. And so the success stories are amazing too. And it comes with both, you know, we've lost kids. We've had kids that have been, we're in some of the toughest, most challenging neighborhoods of the entire country. We've had kids that have been shot. We've had some really tragic, heartbreaking stories. We've also have had lots of youth that have just gone all in and embraced this and made, you know, and pulled their family up and go on and have successful careers and come back and be that role model and peers for their younger peers. And then even just tracking some of the stats and some of the cities that we're in, graduation rates are just this really, dropout rates are a huge issue. Mm-hmm. So some of the cities that we're in, only 60% of kids will graduate high school. And for our youth in the Beat the Streets program, it's over 98%. We're keeping kids in school, keeping them focused, all those things that you know the sport does through going through it. But it's work that's, you know, it needs to keep happening. And I'd say that we're only meeting a fraction of the need that's out there.
Yeah.
We need more people to go and meet the full need that's out there. Cause there's, it might not be for everyone. I think youth need options, you know, options, anything. I'm all in favor for something that gets them, you know, once you get passionate about something and you learn how to how to set goals and work towards those goals. But what we're doing is working for a lot of kids, and I think we're only able to offer to a fraction of the kids that need this across the country.
Well, the one thing I realized just from volunteering at the Beat the Street Chicago event, and then that's just the one I'm familiar with, so that's why I keep referencing it. But you know, you talk to some of these wrestlers, and these happen to be all female wrestlers. And the one girl was telling me she was, you know, 15 years old and didn't have any parents at home. Her mom, you know, just was in and out of the house. And it was just like, you get home from that, and like for days you're thinking about it, and you're like, man, I just wish I could do more, you know? So like, it's just every encounter and every person I've encouraged to get involved with this, it's something where, like, you know, everyone wishes, hey, we'd like to do more and give back. This is the opportunity. So if you're in a city that has a chapter, get out the checkbook or get out your time and go volunteer. They need tutors. They need mentors. They need table workers at these events. They also need funding, right? And if you're not in a city that has one, you know, I know there's tons of business people in Seattle, and there's a lot of former wrestlers up there. That's where I'd encourage you to get involved with Beat the Streets National. And the other thing that I love about this program is, you know, in these impoverished neighborhoods like Southside Chicago, there's what's called food deserts. And I never heard the term. And what that means is that there's no grocery stores down there because it just, economy wise, it doesn't make sense for Whole Foods to have a store down there or for Jewel to have a store down there. So they're only eating this crap at these convenience stores, and obesity's through the roof. So what do you see on that front? Do you see that as a consistent theme as well, like healthy eating and that kind of thing?
Yeah, we're clearly impacting those three pillars. We're health, of course. We're keeping kids active. All of our youth are reporting to be much more. They build more positive attitudes about exercise. Learn nutrition through it. We're absolutely making a big dent in as far as health issues in our society. And then academically, we're keeping kids in school. We're getting them. We're helping them focus and work through and empower those life lessons you learn in the sport and take those lessons and really helping our youth how to embrace challenges, work through adversity, bounce back from failures. And you take that to all areas of life. And then the social emotional piece too is really powerful. Just being able to a lot of times when I'm, you know, I love when I hear this from youth coming through our program. A lot of times they refer to us as, you know, I was catching up with a kid who came through the Beat Streets Philly program recently, and he's about to graduate high school. And he's, I met him maybe 7 years ago, but he was saying that Beat the Streets is a family to me. You know, Beat the Streets, this is our, you see kids grow up through the program. And it's that sense of community is huge as far as the social emotional impact that we're having and there's all sorts. I mean, those are some areas that we focus on, but there's all sorts of, you know, just thinking about having a safe place to go, just that in itself is really big. Having a safe place to go when you're seeing shootings in your neighborhood on a regular basis and you have a safe place to go tonight, that's a big deal. You know, and then on top of that, you got you got people that care about you in your corner, ready to, and then there's also the exposure piece. You know, I mean, a lot of our youth when we started when Beat Street Chicago really stepped up to host the first few national camp and duels and got that concept off the ground, and a lot of our youth that was their first time on a plane or outside of their city, outside of their neighborhood. That's something I hear a lot from our youth too, just the exposure and the opportunities, you know, going and seeing a different area of the country, the traveling piece, all of the opportunities they've gotten through the sport, through Beat the Streets, ends up opening, just kind of, you know, opening your mind up on what's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then the goals start becoming bigger and you start thinking bigger, dreaming bigger than you do, you know, and then you go and you achieve bigger too, once you're able to do that.
Yeah, and you've mentioned the national duels a couple times. So, you know, for folks who are listening, I'm sure they've heard me talk about it before. Basically, you're getting various chapters throughout the country. They're coming to Chicago. They're doing a couple-day camp. They're doing a lot of enrichment, right? Doing like the architecture tour downtown or whatever it is, right? But then they're also doing duels where city versus city. And I can't even imagine just how exciting it must be for the kids to, one, meet other Beat the Streets chapters, but then to like cheer on their team. I mean, what has that been like for you watching that tournament build over the years?
The energy is incredible. Energy is really awesome. The kids get so excited about it every year. And now we're rotating across the country too. So Chicago, we took the kids in Chicago last year. We took them to a Cubs game. It was just like a whole, I mean, the whole experience was incredible. We did a career panel, brought in
Nice.
Professionals talking about different career paths. And you had, we had people in the trades, we had people in marketing, we had college admissions people just talking about pathways and how to go and achieve those areas, be successful in their line of work. The experience is awesome. The energy is incredible. Maybe we could put a link in this podcast. Maybe we could put a link to the documentary.
Yeah,
the we did. That'd be cool.
We will.
Because I mean, I could talk about it, but I feel like that would really, you could hear youth directly sharing their excitement, seeing smiles. It's powerful. It's really powerful. A lot of our youth came back and said that was just a life-changing experience for me.
So where's it going to be this year? Has it been announced yet?
Boston University. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
Boston, yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's exciting. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going Boston this end of June. And Philly in 2025, and then from 2026 we're not sure yet. We gotta figure. Still,
it's like the World Cup, man. You're going 4 years out on us. That's how in demand this thing is.
yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
wow.
It's gonna be like that. Yeah.
That's so cool. Wow. So Boston this year, and then Philly next year, man. It's just exciting to hear about it. It just warms my heart to know that there's so many people out there like you that. This is your full focus, and I couldn't think of anyone better than you because of, all you talk about all the stuff you're doing down in Peru. I mean, this has been your mission for a long time. I mean, like when you were in middle school and high school, were you this kind of person? Were you out doing charity work, volunteering, or something happened to you where it flipped a switch?
Well, I a bit in high school, a bit in college. I went and I went to Togo. I went to Africa to help set up an orphanage before in college. There was a couple experiences like that that I had growing up that, and even just locally, there were just time and time again, what I learned through those experiences that's our true purpose on this earth is it's about, how have we been able to impact those around us, and once you're, and that starts with our inner circle. It starts with our family, our friends, the people that you could just you got to pour love into people and help and do everything you can. And then it starts with that. And then beyond that, it's like, well, what can we do for society and humanity? And mm-hmm. those are things that we should be, I think that everyone, there's different ways to go. Everybody has I'm very fortunate that I landed where I could do this work full time, and I have something I just believe in so much. I can go to bed every night knowing like where I'm working towards a mission that I just full heartedly believe in. But everybody could do something, everybody. And I think that overall, however that fits into our lives, I do think that we draw a greater purpose with life is short. And I think we draw a much greater purpose with our time here.
Yeah.
When we're able to leave a positive impact around those around us. And I think, I don't know, when I'm old and retired and all that, I want that to be that'd be a good legacy to have, to be able to, if we can go build the Beat the Streets movement to impact a million youth across the world. I feel like that's something we could all be really proud of.
It is. And it's what I love about it too, is that there's avenues for everyone who, let's say someone's in they're a lawyer. They got $100,000 worth of student loan debt. They got to be a lawyer for at least 10 more years to pay off their loans. Right. But the best part about Beat the Streets is you can donate. If you can't donate funds, you can donate time. You can donate clothes. There's so many ways to help, and it's just a good feeling to have. And so, I couldn't encourage it more in every episode we talk about it, but let me hit you with this, Ben. So we're going to have you on a yearly basis to do like an annual report. So what are our goals over the next 3 to 5 years for Beat the Streets National?
Well, the way I describe where we're at as an organization is we're finishing to build the vehicle to scale this the way that we want to scale this. So what does that mean we need to do? We need to get a little bit bigger on the at the national office to be able to, we want to be able to invest in leaders. We've seen that that is having that first full-time hire, that executive director in place at the local level is the biggest milestone and hurdle towards sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to have a leadership fund at national that helps make that hire, and that be a core benefit that comes from the national office to local, both existing and future Beat the Streets chapters. And that sounds, a lot of times people think about, not everyone wants to support that, staff position. So a lot of times, sometimes philanthropic people maybe don't want to do that. And we have certainly programming where we were sending out over $1 million in gear now over 3 years to Beat the Streets youth across the country. We have our national camp and duels that we're doing. So we have other really important strategic initiatives that we've been doing and are going to continue to do. But we do believe that the way we're going to scale this the right way is if we can make sure that every existing and future Beat the Streets chapter has an impactful leader at their helm,
mm-hmm.
then we're building this movement to last. We're building this movement to be sustainable. We're building this movement to go on and impact youth for generations to come. So that's our big focus right now, is growing to be able to provide that leadership fund. And that's a key part. And when I say we're building the vehicle to scale, that's a key piece of it. And then the other piece is that we're also going, because we grew decentralized, we're also growing, we have some work to do to get a little more cohesive. And that's the other thing, the things that we'll be working through in the next few years. Like we want to all get on the same technology for data collection so that is not, so that becomes easier. So we can have consolidated metrics on what we're doing, and we could present those to national partners and national funders. We want to do the same thing on, can we get common accounting? Can we work with the same bookkeeping firm to get everyone on the same, have consolidated reports come up. And so those kind of things, that they don't sound, to a lot of people, it might not sound as the most exciting, but it's exciting to me, because what's exciting about it is this is the way that we're going to get those structures in place.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to be built to scale this across the entire country.
And when you go, you go ask a big company for a check, it's like, hey, UFC, for example, or whoever, right? Maybe it's my company, F5, right? You can have that reporting at your fingertips, and you're starting to sound like some of my customers. I got data silos all over the place. And mm-hmm. It's funny that it's no matter how big or small, that's a big challenge, getting like everyone consolidated on the same tech and the same systems, mm-hmm.
But once we do those things, and I say we are, when you said that two, I think we're about 2 to 3 years out from achieving all of that. And we're still scaling in parallel, because there are cities that are ready, and we're going to, and then, so we are still moving forward, and we have a handful of cities in the pipeline. But once we go and achieve and build this vehicle to scale, then we're going to be able to shift our focus into, okay, how many new cities can we bring on each year? Mm-hmm. Who are the next two? Who are the next three?
Yeah.
Let's get to work on that. We're going to be able to shift a lot more of our energy and focus into starting up these, helping leaders get through that startup nonprofit phase and get to a point where they're now ready to go and on a really positive trajectory and go build a really amazing Beat the Streets organization.
And you brought up something earlier that I think is really important to address, because I didn't realize this, but you come to find out that some of these nonprofits, a fraction of the money is actually going to the cause. And it's like, wow, I didn't even know that, it's really shocking. And so when you think about that, when you think, you're given $1, 90 cents is going to a wrestler, you don't have to give the metrics, but what's our approach on that? If someone asks you that, like, how much of the funds are actually going toward the right things,
Yeah, we've consistently kept admin costs under 20%. And that's where you want to be as a nonprofit. You want to be 80% programming, 20% admin. That's the standard. And we've been successful at keeping that, upholding that standard. And that actually becomes easier as you grow to scale. Because when you're a smaller organization, you need to kind of, you need to invest in more administrative costs to be able to grow to a certain size. So it actually becomes easier over time, mm-hmm. is the way that I'm envisioning it. But even now, we've been able to stay true to that ratio.
I love it. You're such an expert with nonprofits, man. You know the lingo, you know the ratios. I got a couple rapid fires for you. So I'm going to name the city. You tell me if they're in the queue or if there's, you know, no beat the streets efforts at all. Here's some cities I go to all the time that I think would be perfect. Miami.
Ooh, exploratory conversations, but nothing. There's no launch committee established, or we don't have. I wouldn't say we're. That's like pre-discovery phase. A couple exploratory conversations. Haven't identified a group of leaders that would be able to build it yet.
Seattle.
Same. A bit of outreach. Couple outreach conversations. And we'll see. Yeah, we'll see. The feelers are out. The feelers are out in both of those cities, I'd say. But I'd welcome, you know, I have listeners here in this podcast, and if they have some really strong, you know, there's a tipping point of energy that it takes, and what it means that you need a group of really committed, capable leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get to that, So if listeners are kind of, hey, I want to be all in and starting a program in Miami or Seattle, you know, love to have that conversation. There's already been some initial feelers out, so there's probably some opportunity to connect people and see if that is what it takes to build a team.
So in the sales world, we're not at stage zero, but we're at a stage one. We've had some initial outreach, but nothing, no commitments yet, right? In those cities.
Stage one, yeah. Stage one exploratory. We call it our onboarding phase. We call it a discovery phase to a building phase to an accreditation phase, and that's our process. So in the discovery phase, we're talking to one. It's establishing what we call a launch committee, and a launch committee would end up being a founding board. That launch committee, that group of committed, capable leaders, which we were looking for on that launch committee, you want a representative of, you want somebody that's a community leader, somebody that's a operational minded leader, and somebody that's a philanthropic leader. If you have that launch committee in place, then we'll start working. Then we'll send over some templates, and they'll work through an initial plan to build out a Beat the Streets organization. And then through that initial planning work, then we can nominate them to the building phase. And then that's where we do a year long temporary kind of lease of the trademark to start setting up a 501c3, start raising some money, start doing the initial work. And then we'll keep the branding on the back end during that building phase. So we're not going public with a website.
Right.
But once we get through that, we go through the accreditation phase, which could be pretty quick, could be a few months. It's basically presenting the plan to the national board. National board votes you in. We welcome you as the newest accredited Beat the Streets chapter. That's when we hit the green light on, you know, you could activate the website, activate social media, do a press release about welcoming the newest chapter and all of that.
Love it. All right, two quick ones. Dallas?
Dallas, yeah, we got some people in Dallas that are interested. Yeah.
Phoenix.
Phoenix is in the works. Phoenix is definitely in the works. There's already
love it.
A pilot program, a group of leaders. We're looking to recruit more leaders to that launch committee. They've been put together some initial scaling plans. So I'd say we're close to bringing them from the discovery phase to the building phase.
And I bring up Phoenix because when I was doing the Henry Cejudo documentary, you know, we flew down to Phoenix twice, met with Henry's coaches, his parents, and, you know, stories like his, these are people like his high school coach didn't get paid a cent. Like, this was Beat the Streets before Beat the Streets. He literally just had a garage and brought people in, and it changed the Cejudo's lives. But all these kids, I mean, these, there was nothing, no, you know, not even parents for a lot of these kids. So, I can definitely put you in touch with some of those coaches because these guys are still passionate. You know, they used to coach at Maryville and they were obsessed with wrestling and still are. But Phoenix is definitely in need, man. There's some tough situations down there, but there's a lot of people out there doing it. But that's why I love like the structure you guys provide. It's like these coaches, like this one guy was like, you know, giving kids a ride in his own car. I mean, he was just doing everything himself. He had no support, you know? So
that's the mission.
Yeah.
That's the mission. Yeah. I always say that the Beat the Streets mission has existed long before Beat the Streets has. It's about every one of those caring, impactful coaches that are doing everything they can to bring the lessons of the sport to life and be there in the corner of a youth that needs them. And that's that's been happening forever, you know, and our coaches right now are delivering the mission. And then what we've done with Beat the Streets is we built an organization around that mission, and now we've built a way to scale this mission at all. You know, we've scaled to a certain level, and now we've built a way to really pick up the pace and take this to a whole new heights, where this could be a movement that grows across the entire world.
It really could. I mean, that's the exciting part. And I would just say, you know, if someone's listening and they work at a Fortune 500, a Fortune 1000, all of those big companies give money away to nonprofits, get in touch with Beat the Streets National. Let's set something up, like a matching fund. I know my company does that. If you're a big wig out there, let's get the checkbooks out. If you're just passionate about wrestling, like my mom, she used to go to wrestling tournaments every weekend. We don't wrestle anymore. She's looking for something to do. She wants to be involved. Beat the Streets is perfect for her. And if there was one in her hometown, she'd be the best table worker you ever had, Ben. I'm telling you, man, she'd be on
it. I believe it. Yeah.
So just people, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like, even if you don't have the funds to contribute, you can contribute in many ways, you know? So I just encourage everyone to go to Beat the Streets National's website, check it out. Message me on Instagram. I'll put you in touch with Ben. Reach out to Ben directly. And yeah, I just want to say, Ben, thank you for the partnership. Thanks for taking some time to come on here. And man, I just get so excited even talking about it. So you've got me fired up for the day.
Thanks, Ryan. Thank you for the platform. Thank you for the ongoing support and believing in the Beat the Streets mission, and just really grateful for everything that you're doing and just to all the listeners and all the people. I mean, this is we want to raise awareness in the wrestling world. The wrestling community is a big and strong community, and the work we're doing, we could take this to whole new heights. You know, there's and like you said, Ryan, there's lots of ways to get plugged in. You know, we need to continue to build our army of supporters. We need coaches, we need volunteers, you know, we need donors, we need leaders, we want to mobilize. I mean, the wrestling community, there's so many millions of people that were either wrestled at one point and we haven't even, our mission appeals even beyond the wrestling community, but we still have a lot of work to grow within the wrestling community. Cause I know there's a lot of people that may not even be aware yet of how much of the work that's going on. And I think, and I'm excited for the future. I'm excited because there's the amazing inspirational youth that we have in this organization. We're seeing our youth come full circle and giving back as coaches. We have we just promoted, John Guevara to our operations director. We just promoted him to director role. He was a Beat the Streets kid. That's now full circle and helping lead this movement at the national level too. And that's the culture we're building. It's changing lives every day. And this is just the beginning. We're going to take this across every major city in the country. We're going to take this across the world. And it's the answer is, it just takes more and more passionate people and leaders to make it happen. And that's the direction we're headed. I have no doubt about that.
Yeah.
I'm really excited and grateful to be a part of it, because it's an amazing thing to be a part of that we could all be really proud of.
Well, you just said something that gets me a little excited. Like, from a competitive standpoint, I know there's other sports out there that probably think they're doing something similar. I think as a wrestling group, we need to come together and really put the rest of the nonprofit world on notice. Like, this is the best sports nonprofit in the world. And the other thing too is, like, just imagine if everyone who wrestled gave $10 to Beat the Streets National. Most people aren't going to miss $10 in their sleep. Yeah. Do you imagine how many kids would be impacted by that? Like, that is exciting to me.
When I think about that, just even if a tenth of the wrestling community were to plug in that way and do a, you know, give it a $10 donation or get plugged in some way, even 10% of the wrestling community would be enough to take this movement to a whole new heights. I mean, we would immediately be built to scale this across the country. Mm-hmm. We'd start building our international scaling plan. We'd be able to onboard 3 new cities a year, 4 new cities a year. We would just be, that's what it takes. Even if we grow into a fraction of the wrestling community, there's enough people out there. This is a big, strong community of people that are really passionate, are going to get the mission right away. So I think if we tap into that energy, into that, you know, into that support, we could take this movement to whole new levels, and so many lives will be changed, you know, in the process.
I think about all those, even outside of cities, like this is maybe getting a little crazy, but I'm sure you thought about this, like even like all the refugee camps, like with Palestine, with Venezuela, with what we're seeing, like that's a powerful, I mean, you could go to that level. I mean, that's how exciting this is to be a part of. So I'm preaching to the choir here, but man, go ahead.
It could keep going. I think where we're at, right? It's like, you know, you got to build one brick at a time and tackle one thing at a time. But I know where I could see us go. I mean, I know we're going to be in the top, you know, we need to be in the top major 30 cities in the country. You know, we need to do that.
That's milestone one. All right. Top 30.
Let's go achieve that. Let's get in every major metropolitan area in the country. And then from there, you know, then we're going to figure out an international plan too. And we go and we get that done. And then it's just, who knows? Yeah. We're going to keep, I mean, I don't really see. What I'd say is this, I don't know what will, I mean, that's a big goal to go accomplish, and we got some work to do to go do that right now. Yeah. And we got to go build the vehicle to really scale this the way we want to scale this first. But I say, once we go and achieve those things, I don't know. There's a lot of ways that we can grow, but what I do know is that as far as I could possibly see ahead, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, I believe that this movement, this organization is going to keep doing this amazing work, keep changing lives, keep getting better at what we're doing, and then be on this thoughtful, measured growth phase as far as I could see ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we want to grow in a way that everyone's built to last, and that we're not breaking promises. You know, every new Beat the Streets city should be, is it's like a promise to those youth, and we want to make sure that they're there to last. But as far as I could see ahead, we're going to be growing in a way that's thoughtful and calculated, but we're going to be growing. That's how I see it. This is, you know, even 30 years from now, I think.
I love it. Andy, where are you at? St. Louis. Actually, we got one in St. Louis, right? Milwaukee, where are you at? Let's get them going.
Yep.
Lot of room to go, man. Well, Ben, it's an honor. It's a pleasure. Thank you again, man. I know we'll be in touch, and we'll get this episode out soon, man. Thanks for your time today. Folks, thanks for listening to the Wrestling Change My Life podcast. To support the show, please go to our online store and check out our merch. It's store.wrestlingchangemylife.com. We have stickers, hoodies, t-shirts. Again, it's store.wrestlingchangemylife.com. Check out the merch store, and we'll see you next time on Wrestling Change My Life. Peace!